From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The prevailing situation in Syria is looking less like a peace process that's underway and more like the beginnings of a real big power confrontation between the U.S. and Russia. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry threatened to cut off all cooperation with Moscow over Syria unless attacks on Aleppo by Russia and the Syrian government, who are battling a number of al-Qaeda-related terrorist groups there, are stopped immediately. CCTV's Nathan King has more.
According to the U.S. State Department spokesman, Kerry told Lavrov that U.S. was preparing to, quote, suspend U.S. bilateral engagement on Syria unless Russia takes immediate steps to end the assault on Aleppo. The assault began last week after a ceasefire brokered by Moscow and Washington broke down after a few days. An offensive by Syrian government forces has made gains in rebel-held areas of eastern Aleppo. Remember, this city in its glory days was Syria's largest with 3 million people. The death toll from this operation may be in the hundreds, including children. Russia has dismissed U.S. claims that Moscow is responsible for the loss of life. The Kremlin says the U.S. accusations are actually damaging the prospects of reviving some kind of peace process. Meanwhile, the foreign ministers of regional rivals Iran and Turkey met in the Turkish capital of Ankara Tuesday. They are on opposite sides of this conflict. Iran supports the Syrian government, while Turkey supports some of the rebel factions. In fact, Turkey, remember, also launched an offensive across its southern border into Syria. This is the third set of talks on Syria between the two countries in the last 6 weeks. Of course, if talks break down between Moscow and Washington, both have envisaged saying that there was no military solution to the Syrian crisis, nearly 6 years old now. But if that breaks down, then really the fighting would be set to continue as we've seen over the last over 5 years. Nathan King, CCTV, Washington.
Kerry's threat came as a spokesperson, John Kirby, on Wednesday issued a warning to Moscow that sounded more like another threat, this one considerably more serious.
Extremist groups will continue to exploit the vacuums that are there in Syria to expand their operations, which will include, no question, attacks against Russian interests, perhaps even Russian cities. Russia will continue to send troops home in body bags.
RT's Guyan Chichikayan was at the State Department press conference at which Kirby issued that warning, and she filed this report.
We're now learning that Syrian rebels have received, quote-unquote, excellent quantities, as they put it, of surface-to-surface Grad missiles from, quote-unquote, foreign states. The foreign states were not specified in the Reuters report. Presumably, those are U.S. allies in the region who already have a history of supplying weapons to Syrian rebels. Considering how intertwined some of the rebel groups are with al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda in Syria, especially in Aleppo, it could be a matter of time before those powerful weapons end up in the hands of terrorists.
Margaret Kimberly is a columnist at BlackAgendaReport.com under the heading Freedom Rider. This week's column is entitled simply Vote Green. We spoke with her via Skype late Wednesday.
Margaret, welcome, and an interesting piece as usual at BlackAgendaReport.com. Freedom Rider, Vote Green.
Yes. I am going to vote for the Green Party ticket of Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka, and I'm encouraging others to do likewise and not to be afraid of Hillary Clinton defeat, but to be galvanized and see the need, the absolute necessity for progressives to get rid of the Democratic Party. And this is not just a protest vote. It's seen that way. This is, you know, it's just a protest vote because the way our system is set up, parties outside of the Democrats and Republicans are relegated to spoiler status. But I think we sell ourselves short when we just say it is a protest vote. The goal in voting for the Greens and getting the Stein-Baraka ticket as many votes as possible is to begin the end of the Democratic Party. And that is the only hope for people who call themselves progressives.
One of the things you said is Trump is a scarecrow for political children, but Clinton is a real live proven monster.
Yes. I think that was Glenn Ford's intro, actually. But, when you think about the two of them, he is the unknown quantity. We don't know what Trump would do. You never know what anybody will do till they get into office.
Right.
But we definitely know what Hillary Clinton will do. This is going to be Clinton the sequel. She's been Secretary of State. She has a record. She says it's a great record to run on, but it isn't. It's a record of destruction of everything progressive people always say they want to do. In the 90s, the Clinton administration, and she was right with her husband in increasing mass incarceration, talking about violent black youths, and they need to be brought to heel, and they're super predators. So she was right beside her husband, who, as he said, when he first ran for president in 1992, you get two for the price of one. So whatever Bill Clinton did, we're going to get with Hillary. And she's already said she would put him in charge of the economy, that they would be a co-presidency again. So what did we get from the economy with Bill Clinton? The repeal of Glass-Steagall, the beginning of the financial meltdown, the recession, which stole so many jobs and people lost their assets. So we're going to get that again. The bowing down to neoliberal forces, to the 1%, to the big banks doing their bidding. In foreign policy, as Secretary of State, what did she do? She destroyed Libya. And she was very proud of that, of destroying this country, killing thousands of people, killing their president, and then moving on to Syria and hoping that would be as simple. But it's 5 years later, and after 500,000 deaths and 9 million refugees, they have not finished the job, but that is her hope, and that is the hope of the war party. That is why they bombed Syrian troops about a week and a half ago, to kill any chance of peace and keep this going until she takes office and she can continue this war. So we have a return to racist policy, a return to neoliberal economic policy, a hard right foreign policy with more intervention around the country, around the world, more death, more destruction. So that's what she stands for, and we cannot be afraid of her losing.
You know, there's this almost screech coming out of the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party establishment over Jill Stein's candidacy and the Green Party in general. And it's really heightened in the last few days. The night of the debate, apparently, Stein had millions of people that were paying attention to her protest outside, just over Facebook alone. It was a reach of 4.5-5 million people, and it continued for several days. And the Democrats are going crazy. It's a wasted vote. Don't assume someone else will stop Trump, comes out of the Nation magazine, all of this stuff. You know, to those who are afraid of a what they consider a repeat of 2000 election, which of course isn't how it played out, but the accepted wisdom, for lack of a better word, is that Ralph Nader took the election away from Gore and gave it to Bush, which led to the Iraq War, and that now we risk the same thing. What do you say to that?
Well, I say it was a mistake. Not to just own that, because Nader said all along he didn't care if Al Gore lost, if his candidacy killed Al Gore's election. It's not true. It's a mixture of things. It's not accurate to say that Nader is what caused Gore to lose. They kept people from voting in Florida. That's what caused Gore to lose.
Right.
Thousands of people who were Democratic voters were kept from the polls. Their names were taken off the ballot. And that is what allowed Bush to eke out his victory. However, Democrats need to be upfront about making themselves former Democrats. I guess that's the way to put it, and saying that they're through with this party once and for all. And so that is what makes the Nader, the experience with Nader, why is the specter 16 years later that keep people in such fear of voting outside of the Democratic Party, because of the contested election, and if it weren't for Nader, Gore could have won, and we probably wouldn't have had a war in Iraq, probably not. But there has to be a realization that the Democrats are not reformable, the lesser of two evils argument, the, you know, we need a Democrat making federal judicial appointments, which I prefer their appointments to those of Republicans. But as I just said, with what we got with Bill Clinton and now what we've gotten with Barack Obama, we see or should see the fallacy of thinking that the Democrats are this bulwark against evil. They participate in the evil. What do we have to show for Obama being president? They always talk about Obamacare. And that helped some people. But the Obamacare enshrines keeping the health care system in the hands of the private sector with a bailout of the pharmaceutical companies and the health insurance companies. They've made a fortune because of Obamacare. Yes, the Medicaid expansion did help many people. But aside from that, what else do we have? Obama has gone along with austerity. Obama is as much an interventionist as George W. Bush. He just doesn't send American troops the way Bush did to Iraq. Clinton is blamed, but he was her boss, so he signed on to destroying Libya and to destroying Syria. They had in 2 years, 2009 and 2010, they had majorities in both houses of Congress, a Democratic president. They could have done anything they wanted to do. They raised the minimum wage, a grand total of 70 cents an hour. So what do we have to brag about when we have Democratic presidents? So I think it's people need to just own that the Democrats have to go. They are the problem. They are the problem. And that means, now having said that, we can't run away from it, then that puts the onus on those of us who make this case. We have to organize to build a new party, to do something revolutionary, not fake revolutionary like Bernie Sanders did. But it's truly revolutionary to say we're going to start over again, we're getting rid of this party, and we're going to start with a new one. And that means in the interim, and it could be a brief period of time, it could be a couple of years, it's, you know, it's an unknowable, but we can have a new party that really represents our interests, but we have to get rid of this party first.
And you write that Bernie Sanders ought to be ashamed for leading millions of people on a path straight to Hillary Clinton, but he refuses to disappear. He says this is no time for a protest vote.
Yeah, but so why did he bother running? I mean, he said, I felt he didn't really want to get the nomination. And he said, in effect, by challenging Hillary Clinton, that we should reject the way the Democratic Party has been operating for years. Although I have to say I was never impressed with him. I did not think his agenda was very left-wing. There were a couple of things, that he talked about quite a lot, but his foreign policy was fairly conservative to me. He didn't present anything different. He would say things like the Palestinians deserve respect, which, I mean, really? I mean, that doesn't keep anybody from getting killed in Gaza.
Right.
So corporate personhood and saying that political contributions are free speech, that was his big thing. But aside from that, and he talked about debt, education debt, and so forth.
Yep, and
so he was, you know, better than Hillary, but that's damning with faint praise. So, yeah. But I was never impressed with him anyway. But as, you know, critics predicted, he succumbed. He endorsed her. He got millions of people excited about the prospect of something new, and then he caved. And now he's telling people, you have to vote for Hillary, who he challenged. So I don't know why he bothered challenging her, but he did say, I will have to give credit where it's due. He said so all along. He would endorse her. if she got the nomination. So, yeah, he needs to just go away. He needs to just disappear. He's a footnote in history. His success, the success that he has, was significant, and it tells us that there is this hunger to ditch this party and to ditch what they do. But he raised expectations and then did nothing with it.
You know, and on the point of this not being the time for a protest vote, you have not just his perhaps unexpected success riding atop a working class uprising that manifests behind him in the Democratic Party, but you have the same phenomenon with, you know, its own characteristics in the Republican Party that was successful, actually. The Republican leadership has been totally trounced. You still have people in the streets as well. And you have looming over us World War III, which seems to be, I mean, Ashton Carter Tuesday talking at an Air Force base out in New Mexico, you know, reiterating the fact essentially that we maintain a first strike doctrine. When someone asked him, it seemed like it was a setup, you know, shouldn't we, since other countries were basically rattle the nuclear sword and gain concessions, shouldn't we find a way to use our mighty nuclear power to exercise soft power? She didn't use the words, but soft power. In other words, threaten the world with a first strike, as we're encountering Russian jets over Syria and such. So to me, it seems not only is this not the wrong time for a protest vote, but actually exactly the right time for it.
Yes, and unfortunately, this threat of this risk of World War III that the Obama administration has gotten us into, and that Hillary Clinton can only increase, has just been disappeared by the corporate media. The Putin bashing, the Russophobia, has silenced so many people who ordinarily would speak out. If we had a Republican president, many people call themselves progressives would say something. But we have NATO on Russia's borders, the attempt to pull Ukraine into the Western orbit, which has created a catastrophe for people there. The regime change attempt in Syria has brought the U.S. and Russia nose to nose. And this is, we only have Putin to thank for being the only sensible one who has not escalated anything. So this is what we have. We have more of this to look forward to with Hillary Clinton. Now, Trump says he's the one who has said no more regime change. He said he's going to stop this. Now, you never know when people get into office what they will do. And if he actually, against the wishes of the Republican establishment, if he did manage to win, I'm sure they wouldn't just stand by and let him live up to any promises like that that he made. Right. So you don't know what would happen. So he is an unknown there. She is a known, 100% known. And she risks getting us all killed. And I don't believe I'm exaggerating when I say that.
Yeah, I mean, on that very point, in the last week, first of all, you have the context that what's being sold is, do you want Donald Trump's finger on the nuclear button? While Ashton Carter is saying, look, we can push the button anytime we want, and that's our policy, and we expect to get concessions out of that. In other words, threatening people with blowing them up if they don't do what they're told. Right. You also, last week, I guess some rumor, I don't know, it was leaked from the White House, whatever, but the people in the Senate got the idea that Barack Obama was about to issue an executive order abandoning the first strike policy. In other words, that the U.S. reserves the right, A, to make preemptive strikes, and B, to use nuclear weapons first, which essentially means to blow people up with nukes at will. Well, in the Senate, that that provoked an immediate response, a letter from 30 senators asking him not to do it. And then yesterday, the day after the debate, when Trump brought up the fact that Clinton plays fast and loose with the idea of nuclear war with Russia, two Democratic senators they proposed a bill that would remove the ability of the president to use nuclear weapons without a congressional declaration of war, which, in fact, I didn't know was the case at this point, but apparently that's it. And they said it's because if Trump ends up president, we want to make sure Congress has oversight over the use of nuclear weapons.
Only if Trump is president, not if Hillary's president.
Right. So, you know, that's the context.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to foreign policy, I'm far more afraid of her. Now, having said all of this, I have to be honest, and I cannot ignore Trump's appeals to racism, especially against Latino immigrants and Muslim immigrants.
Right.
That's something real, and I can't tell other people that they should not be concerned about that. As a black person, I am concerned because I think that sort of language unleashes people who keep their racism secret, and it gives them permission. And I don't know what that will mean for people of color, for Trump to be president. That does worry me. I have to say that. But I do think the answer to all of these conundrums is for us to remain and stay organized. And electoral politics cannot be an end in itself. We cannot just say that all you have to do is vote. Every 4 years, just get out and vote, and that solves every problem. It does not. We have to be active. It's mass action that makes things happen, or keeps other things from happening. Even if Trump became president, Democrats could stop him. We're always, when a Democrat is in the White House, it's very interesting. Even when they have a majority, their excuse is always, well, it's not a veto-proof majority. It's not 66 senators. They always have an excuse for not doing what Democrats want them to do. They always talk about, well, Republicans can filibuster. Well, can't Democrats filibuster?
Right.
So if Democrats did as they claim to believe, we wouldn't have a reason to fear a Trump presidency. There's been this total stand down. Democrats stand down completely when they have a Democratic president and say nothing. There has been no vocal opposition in the House, in the Senate, to any of the interventions that Obama has instigated. The coup in Ukraine has been a disaster and has reignited the Cold War, which could get hot. But you hear nothing from Democrats.
Right.
They have silenced themselves completely. So it's pretty clear it's the people who are going to have to do this, whoever wins. And can't just sit back and relax and say, oh, thank God Trump didn't win, Hillary's in. Well, she's going to be a disaster for all the reasons I just mentioned. And the fears of Trump are real, but that doesn't have to be the case if he's the president. If people stay organized and get out into the streets the way we've done in the past. So I'd say all in all, I can stand by what I've said about the importance, the necessity to stop voting for Democrats and to actually plan to replace them with a new, really progressive party.
You know, on that particular point, I saw something go by on Facebook earlier today, Hunter Thompson saying that we have to get rid of this politics of the lesser evil and, provide a real choice for people, whether it's inside or outside of the two-party system. And he was talking about outside. And then at the bottom, it has a date. It was from he was saying it during the 1972 election.
Yes, it's the same thing. Every 4 years, there is an excuse. There is a reason why we have to vote for the Democrat and why we cannot possibly think about going outside. And people will keep doing that as long as we fail to explain the problems that the Democrats present and the evil things that they have caused to happen. It's Bill Clinton who ended the right for public assistance for 60 years. It was a right. And now the poverty has increased all across the country because of these limits on public assistance. He did that. That may have been a Republican dream, but he made that a reality. Crack cocaine being used as an excuse to fill the prisons. It's a Democrat who made that happen. So we have to keep reminding people what really happens when Democrats get into office. And they don't even help other Democrats get elected. That was one of the things revealed in the DNC emails that were leaked. And that is why it was so important to distract people and claim that Vladimir Putin was behind it. Those email leaks revealed that the Democrats routinely deprive other Democrats of campaign funds. And that's why Republicans run so many state legislatures. It's not just the Koch brothers and Alec. It's because the Democrats concede the field. They don't care. They just want a standard bearer to help them do business with the 1% and do the bidding of the ruling classes. And all their appeals of being more inclusive or caring about abortion rights or caring about any of the things that they, in fact, don't care about, that they care about immigrants. But Obama deported more people than any other president. Obama has used the power to punish whistleblowers beyond any other what any other president has done. So they are phony. They don't believe in most of what they claim to believe in, and they use the Republicans as this boogeyman to keep people in line and keep voting for them. But it's time to call them on it, and it's time to say we have to get rid of them, and we have to start now. And Greens don't have to be in the spoiler status. They only stay in the spoiler status if people don't vote for them. If we stop supporting Democrats, we can start anew with a party that actually represents us. But that's everything that has to be said. And I realize you can't just tell people don't be afraid of Hillary Clinton losing without saying all of that. And, you know, no one encourages us to really be politically active. We're just encouraged to keep voting.
Right.
But so I do think that fear has to be addressed. And I think we have to tell people it is doable. We can have a new party, but we have to get rid of them and we have to own it. And we have to say, yes, the Democrats have to lose. Yes, Hillary Clinton has to lose. Yes, that means Trump will be president. No, that's not the end of the world.
And finally, you know, while you're talking about putting an end to voting for the lesser of two evils, you are affirmatively voting for Jill Stein. Maybe you could outline a few reasons for that.
Well, you know, if you look at the platform of the Green Party, it's everything that progressives say they want. No more intervention, closing military bases, education as a right, health care as a right. Medicare for all, which is what Obamacare should have been, getting rid of student debt, all of these things that people say they want, having some teeth in the Justice Department, punishing killer cops, all of these things, not bailing out the banks, all of these things that progressives say they want are in the Green Party platform. And it's not something that should be seen as an impossible dream and wishful thinking. These are things that people should vote for, and you will not get them by voting for the Democrats. So all these things that progressives say they want to see happen, they do not get over and over and over again, yet are afraid to go out of the duopoly system.
Margaret Kimberly writes a weekly column at blackagendareport.com entitled Freedom Rider. This week, her column is simply entitled Vote Green. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Thank you, Doug.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.